Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and t-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to Cosmopolitan's All The Way With. I'm Laura Capon.
And I'm Paisley Gilmore. And this week we'll be joined by Ita, who coordinates sex scenes for TV.
I've been looking forward to this one for weeks.
I know you have. Your enthusiasm honestly fills me with joy. I love it.
I know. I make
so
up
much.
For your lack of it.
No, I've got so much enthusiasm. I love all of the shows she's worked on, as do you. So,
I mean, we talk about them all the time on this podcast. Normal People, I May Destroy You, like both our favourites. Mm. I won't tell them all now. We'll keep some of them as a surprise.
Before we meet Ita, though, I need to tell you something.
Yeah. Oh, you can't see, but I'm clenching my fists.
The worst thing happened to me this weekend.
Oh, a bad thing. Oh, no, what?
Well, not worst, but just like the least thing that you want. That doesn't make sense. So, you know, I mean, Elsie has been obsessed with the fact that I've been trying to have a threesome.
Only because I'm so vanilla, as we've learned.
Nothing wrong with that. We're not kink shaming anyone. So anyway, I completed my mission and it was fine. And that's all we shall say about that. That's for another. We'll use that in another piece of content. But I went to this event on Saturday night, luckily a socially distanced, like, kind of event run by a kind of queer sex positive events company.
Okay.
And I walked in with six of my friends and I sat down and I looked at the table next to me. Bear in mind, you can't move tables.
Oh, no.
You can't get up because it's COVID. I look to my right, and who do you think was there, Laura Capon?
Oh, was it the couple?
It was the bloody couple.
Oh, and is this the first time? Because you haven't, you haven't spoken since the threesome.
We haven't messaged. They didn't check even to see if I got home, okay? Thanks, guys. Oh. Don't worry about me. So I looked to the right, saw them, and just my instant reaction was I just went, oh, shit. And everyone turned and looked at me, and I was like, and one of my friends said as a joke, haha, it's not the couple you had a threesome with, is it? Because at pre-drinks before the event, I'd been telling them the whole story. Oh, it was just awful. Anyway, they came and spoke to me in the end.
They did. Was that worse?
Yes. And also they were sat with someone I know through work who later came up to me at the bar and said, I've just heard a story about you, you fucking legend. And I was like, no. So
also, I feel that's not fair, like, to go and tell that story. Like, that's a very intimate story.
I agree. But I do think, given my job and the space, I kind of forgive them for it. If it was like, you know, a professional party and they did it, it would be out of order.
Did they say why they hadn't? I know it was kind of mutual between you as well, but.
Yeah. Well, they knew I was dating someone else anyway. And obviously they're a couple. They don't. And I don't care. No, they didn't say. But it just got me thinking about like those horrible. You can't just have a night out in London where you don't bump into people. Have you ever?
I haven't bumped into any of my couples I've slept with.
Your many, many couples.
I've had that awkward thing of like, I remember when I like confessed, you know, when you do something when you're drunk and you like confess your love to someone, I confessed my love to someone. And then, you know, and you see them again for like the first time and you're not expecting it. And I did this awkward, like, we hadn't addressed it. It had just pretend it didn't happen. And I did this awkward like wave, but it was more like, you know, a netball, like a shoulder pass, like a wave that almost was like a high five. It was even my friends who I was with were like, why did you do like a shoulder pass?
That's so good.
And I've bumped, who else have I bumped into? My, an ex-boyfriend in Waitrose at Christmas. This is like a Richard Curtis film. And I was like holding a mini tree. like a mini Christmas tree. And the worst thing, he was with his nan. And you know when you like, oh, you get to know the fact, and I loved his nan, but also it's like, I don't, oh God, I don't want to talk now. Like, I look like shit.
No.
And I've seen his mum, and I was holding a box of fish fingers on this occasion. And it got to a point where, you know, you just want to go because you've had that, oh, so where are you living now? And then I was like, oh, better go. My fish fingers are defrosting.
No, no, you didn't.
I know. And now I just think about that and I just, oh.
So funny. Do you know what? Thank you. Because mine was like, oh, I bumped into them at this really cool, like, queer sex event. How awful. And you topped it, mate.
Honestly, the fish finger one is probably the worst. And I'm always just so awkward because I feel like it's rude to ignore them. But equally, I chat to them and I'm like, no, I don't want to do this.
Why are we doing this? I know, I wish there was like a universal way to deal with that because...
Like a badge maybe, you know, like... save me a seat, but like, spare me your chat.
Yeah, not up for talking. We need that for exes in the supermarket. It's always the supermarket and I've always got greasy hair in a bun.
Yeah, you always look like shit. And when you look good, you don't see anyone.
Don't see a soul.
Not a cricket. Nothing.
My fish fingers are defrosting. Better go.
She probably just, oh, like, oh, what a quirky girl. Oh.
She's kooky, that Laura. The one that got away.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I understand now why he dumped her. Yeah,
makes sense. On to Eater.
Yes. We're joined today by Eater O'Brien, who for the last 6 years has been directing and supervising sex scenes in TV, film and theatre. Her job involves helping film crews and actors understand best practice when working with intimacy, nudity and scenes with sexual content. Welcome, Eater.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
Hi. I've said already so many times how excited I am to have you on. But I didn't know your job existed. I didn't know you existed. And now I'm obsessed with you, basically.
That is so creepy. It's gone from I don't know who you are to I'm in love with you.
Which is completely mad. I'm delighted to be here. And thank you so much for asking me.
Thank you for putting up with the weirdness of Laura Capon. So would we refer to your job as intimacy coordinator? Is that like your, what do you have on LinkedIn?
Yes, intimacy coordinator, absolutely.
Okay. I just wanted to check that.
Yes, yes.
And what does being an intimacy coordinator involve?
An intimacy coordinator is a practitioner who brings open communication and transparency regarding talking about the intimate content. And that's right from the get-go, from producers and through to directors, right the way through to wardrobe, first ADs, actors, through to creating the work. We put in place agreement and consent, and that's of touch, of simulated sexual content and of nudity regarding all the content that's been asked of the actor. And then we give a clear choreography to the intimate content. So we give a really clear structure so that everybody knows what's happening, meaning that everybody can bring their best work to the intimate content.
So you don't just pop up when they start filming the sex scenes, you like have input on when they're even writing them and...
Sometimes we have input when we're writing them, but what we absolutely do have is right from the get-go, producers seeing the script and seeing it as intimate content, on productions that they contact us at that point, and then we're part of the preparation right the way through to film. That's always when it works the best.
So would most like larger production TV films, theatres have an intimacy coordinator?
It's getting there. Yeah. As you know, as you're saying, you didn't know this role existed. This role didn't really exist. You know, the first actual TV productions that I did work on was sex education. Before that, I was putting the work in place in theatre, and I was teaching the work. So it's early days, and so many, many productions are coming to us when they need support for the intimate content, but as yet it's not known throughout the whole industry. And indeed, just as I've explained to you, actually what we bring as practitioners isn't known, particularly the aspect of, you know, that it's not just safeguarding, and we're not just helping to check in with the actors and do the nudity waivers, but it is actually bringing a skill of physical storytelling, just like a stunt coordinator. You wouldn't say to the stunt coordinator, just come along and check out the actors are okay, make sure the nudity waivers are there, and then stand back and don't do anything. you know, the stunt coordinator is going to teach techniques for how to throw a punch, and then they're going to, you know, choreograph it really clearly so it's telling the right storytelling. They're going to be there teaching those skills, choreographing it really clearly so that you get the best things possible. And that's the extra bit that is not quite understood sometimes of the what the intimacy coordinator is bringing to the whole process.
It seems bizarre that there hasn't been someone doing that on all productions since day one, doesn't it? Like, it just seems like so necessary.
Yeah. Do you think that's also come from, I feel like you said sex education was your first, and obviously that's been received so well, especially regarding the sex scenes. Do you think that's people like, oh, what do they do differently there? And then they found you?
So first of all, yes, isn't it mad? Isn't it mad that before now, yes, it was wrong, that there wasn't the idea that you needed a practitioner, just like if there was a dance, you had to have a choreographer or a fight, a stunt coordinator. And my sense of that is that thing that you know that everybody just doesn't walk down the street knowing how to do a waltz. You know you're going to need to teach them the timing of that and the choreography and the steps. Likewise, everybody doesn't walk down the street knowing how to do swordplay really brilliantly. But the sense that perhaps everybody in some form or other as human beings will have their, you know, own sexual expression. And so not having the sense that actually you need to do a risk assessment, and actually as practitioners, we're bringing choreographic skills, you know, we're body practitioners, and we're bringing that skill of going, this is actually a body dance. You've got two people moving together, either in rhythm or against a rhythm with each other, and that needs to be choreographed really clearly so that everybody's comfortable. So that's why I think it wasn't there in the first, you know, that there wasn't an expanding to actually realise there's a risk and actually we need to choreograph this.
Yeah. And I guess just for anyone who doesn't know, that could you explain like why that's so important? Because obviously there've been a lot of people coming out saying they've worked on films before where maybe they weren't so comfortable in retrospect with how it was kind of the sex scenes were conducted.
That's right. Well, actually, then it brings it to the next bit. The other reason that this wasn't dealt with well is because people are just embarrassed to talk about the sexual content in an open and adult way, talking about it professionally. So that was a big part of it also. And so in that place before, without there being a practitioner to bring a skill, and without there being a process by which, you know, we're invited to talk about the intimate content openly and professionally, right from the producer, director, right from the get-go, that then invariably the content was left, it wasn't discussed, and it was the elephant in the room that was everybody knew was there and wasn't dealt with. And so it meant that sort of people would, the actors would turn up on the day, they'd be saying to the wardrobe people, oh my goodness, I've got the intimate scenes today, what modesty clothing do you have, help? And then they come on set and they're just expected to just go for it. And in all of those situations, it means that you know, somebody can't really be serving the storytelling professionally. You know, also the director wasn't necessarily even getting the content that they really wanted, because it wasn't discussed, it wasn't open, it wasn't clear. And then that's where a lot of the times you got this sense of, you know, as an audience, when we watched the intimate content, feeling it was embarrassing. And my sense is that what we were feeling as an audience was actually the actors personally feeling uncomfortable into the intimate content, because it wasn't clear. They didn't know where they were going to be touched. They didn't know if where they were going to touch their partner was okay for them. And in that in-between place of, you know, invariably actors always want to try and do their best, but they'd be trying to do their best while also not really being sure if what's going to happen to them personally was okay. And that's where we've got this really weird situation. And as you said, all these stories of actors saying how awkward, how uncomfortable it was to do the intimate content, but it doesn't have to be like that anymore.
I was just thinking how much that mirrors the way people feel about and have sex in real life as well. Like, they're not sure about the boundaries, the communication, wanting to perform. It's all kind of really similar to real life.
Yeah.
Because we just don't talk about it.
That's right. That's right. Yes, it's a delicate thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
In real life, and then even more in, you know, professionally. But that's where, when you have the open communication, then you can have the joy of, you know, I had one of the productions in the early days, I really worked hard with the producers and with the, you know, with the ADs to make sure I put in place the time for rehearsal. And then I got a message from the production saying, oh, the actor doesn't want to rehearse. He doesn't want to make it a bigger thing than it needs to be.
Aww.
I know, I know. And of course, is that a thing that that's still in that realm? It's a thing. It's a yeah. thing to be got over. And actually, when you flip it and you go, actually, this is natural, it's normal, it's a really important bit of our human storytelling in any story that it's in, and it should become a no thing. It should just become something that you deal with professionally, openly, so you can make the best work. And as you can see from all the productions that I have worked on, where they have embraced the role and put in place a really good process like Sex Education, Normal People, I May Destroy You, then that means that you can, it does become just a normal, another part of the arc of our storytelling, worked in a really professional way, and we will make really good content.
Yeah.
So how did you get into this, Eater? Like, what's your kind of background? How do you know, like, what we all don't know?
That sounded so accusatory.
No,
how do you know?
I know, I meant it in a genuine, like, please, can you teach us?
My journey has been, I feel like I've been guided and blessed to gradually come through to the point that I am now. So my journey in the profession was that I actually started dancing at the age of 3. My wow. family's Irish. I know my mum wanted me to do Irish dancing lessons, and in Southeast London there wasn't any, so she sent me to this amazing ballet teacher called Mrs. Handel in Hayes. And then the school that I went to happened to have this most amazing ballet teacher called Madeline Sharp. So I trained as a ballet dancer, went to school at the Royal Academy of Dancing, went to Bush Davis, and then ended up working as a musical theatre dancer for 10 years. I retrained at Bristol Vic in acting and worked as an actor for 8 years. And then when my kids were young, looked at what I could do that wasn't taking me all around the country. And so did the MA in movement studies at Central School of Speech and Drama. And so I've worked as a movement teacher and a movement director since 2007. And then I'd written my own play, and then was looking at, I'd put that on, and then I was looking at doing a larger piece, a device piece, looking at the dynamic of abuse in our society, the flip side of the perpetrator and the victim. And in that process, looking at how do I keep my actors safe? What processes and principles should I be putting in place in the rehearsal room to make sure my actors could be present, centred, grounded, both in themselves, with the ensemble, in the space, in order to explore that work in a really healthy and robust way. And then in particular, most importantly, to be able to let go of that work at the end of the day. And in that process started developing, you know, sort of how I was working. And then I got asked to start teaching what I was developing. And then through that, and that was in April 2015, started teaching the work. And as a year after year, the actors were going, this is great to be taught this, but what about in the profession? And so I started developing guidelines and shared the guidelines in the professions in June 2017, and was, you know, in conversation with Equity. And then October 2017, Weinstein, you know, happened, the Me Too and the Time's Up movement. And I was there already, had prepared the guidelines saying, look, here's a process by which we can work with the intimate content in a really open, adult, professional way. And yeah, and then the rest is from that came then the role of the intimacy coordinator, and then the work that you've now seen.
Yeah.
You know, invariably a movement director would help get them warmed up a bit, have that physical shape, physical frame, and yeah, just be in their bodies themselves. That's one of the things Michaela Cole said about I heard her say on an interview around coming in to help support them with I May Destroy You, that of course I'm coming in as a movement person, having a sense of let's just warm our bodies up and get into our bodies in order to tell this physical story. And that was really lovely to hear her say that sort of, that's inherently yeah. part of who I am and what I bring. But that's a really important part. You know, intimate content is about going from, you know, it might be a gaze to start off with, into intimate dialogue, and then dropping into that touch and into whatever intimate choreography there needs to be. It is a body dance, and we need to get into our bodies in order to tell that story.
So when you get to work on that, so when you go to film that scene, have you just got like rough guidelines of what needs to happen, and then you direct and work with the actors to be like, well, then you touch him there, or she does this, or how does it actually work in practice?
So it's always really important, and for the industry to know this, my work is absolutely to serve the director's vision.
Okay.
So always starts with speaking to the director. What do you want? What do you see from this scene? You know, you can read a scene, you can have an idea in your head, but actually the director might have something completely different. So it starts from there. And then the work with the actors is then going from the actors to the actor-director rehearsal. So there's the intimacy coordinator. I'll be present. You know, we invariably do a read through, discuss the scene. What's the scene about? What are the beats of the scene? What's the power play? Already from that discussion, you're getting a sense. And I'm also, as a body person, I'm watching the impulses of the actors, you know, that shift of who they are in their personal self to how they talk about this, the character. So we're looking at what the energy is of this character. And then once we know what the basic shape of the scene is, then we'll get up and then I'll sort of put in place, okay, so we know that these particular body parts are in play. So we'll agree touch, we'll have that moment of agreement and consent. And that's incredibly important. And the shift in the industry is at that point, sort of checking out what are you happy with physically being in play? But most importantly, what are you not happy with? Where are your no-go areas? And also I sort of always say to the actor, you know, your yes is your yes, your no is your no, and your areas of maybe are also a no. Because as soon as you're not sure, you can't really be free as the actor. So checking out what body parts are in play. And then we'll choreograph really clearly. So it is absolutely that. So, you know, you have that gaze, step forward, put your hand on the cheek, into kissing, into lying back on the bed. You know, so the shape of this, the structure of the intimate content is really clearly choreographed. And again, as I say, while I'll be helping the actors to choreograph it, I'm absolutely taking from everything that they have shared, their impulses. I'm making the intimate content, you know, sort of so that it's natural for that particular actor. And then once the actors know what the physical shape is, then they can go, phew, great. And it really is lovely. Once we find our way through it, I'll get them to repeat it again and again. And then by then, like I was working with a young actor and he was really nervous. And by the time we then did, okay, and again, he goes, oh, right. It's like a dance that I've done forever. And you can see him go, great, great. I can now relax on this. Now I can get on and really do a good job acting this scene.
Yeah.
So would you say I'm just thinking of like improv and things. Would you say that's a bad thing for actors to be encouraged to do in sex scenes because of the consent issue?
So improvisation as an actor's tool is really important and a really exciting tool. So it's not about not having improvisation, but it is about putting in place a couple of boundaries. So one of the things that we put out in place is a timeout. So be it if we're working in theatre, in a rehearsal or on set, that the actor has the autonomy to halt the action. So one of the things you can put in place for improvisation is to have that time out. So as soon as anything happens that you're not comfortable with, to have a halt to the action. Another really good way of improvising is to have all of that action without any actual touch. So you can get as close as you like, but no actual touch. And then you can really have that frisson of the power play and one on top of the other. But as soon as you brush or touch, then the improvisation stops. And the director can be watching and go, great, that moment was brilliant, that moment was brilliant. And then you'd go through the same process of agreement and consent for the bits that you've seen that you really like, and then re-remember it, re-choreograph it. So there are absolutely ways that we can, can work with improvisation, but still work with the idea of, you know, agreement and consent and put in those place those boundaries of time out.
So what makes a good sex scene?
I don't know. You tell me.
I mean, I think every scene.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
In normal people.
Yay, brilliant. So for me, you know, what I'm looking at doing is what's the storytelling? You know, how Sally Rooney speaks about, you know, how she wrote The Intimate Content is exactly what I'm, you know, as a practitioner is bringing is what, why is this storytelling there? What's it telling us? How's it pushing the story forward? What's it telling us about each of these characters? What's it teaching us about these characters in relationship? What are the beats of the scene? What's the character's intention? What do they want? What's stopping them from getting them what they want? And once you do that, you know, which is basic, the basic work of actor, director, interrogating the scene, then there's a real clarity of, you know, so the actor can be full of really serving all of that conversation, the direct, you know, again, that conversation is about, you know, the director's vision into that. And then once you've got that detail, then you just journey your way through choreographing it really clearly. And for me, that's what gives a really good scene. So for example, all those scenes in Normal People, each and every scene, those characters at a different point in their lives. They're a different, you know, perhaps the scene in episode 6 where they've, you know, been with other people, they've come back together. That's what we're looking at, that where are they now? You know, what body parts are in play because of where they're at? What do they want to express with each other? And when you have the time and space to really, you know, interrogate all of that and make sure that that's in what you bring to the scene, then it gives really good storytelling. You know, just like you see in Normal People.
So interesting, because I was just thinking, like, obviously there's so many bad sex scenes out there historically, and I thought, like, they're usually, to me, they seem like they're just made just to show shagging. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if I can trash talk individual films, but don't know if anyone has seen Blue is the Warmest Colour.
I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
Have
yet.
You? Yeah. There's just, like, a super long, super, I guess, over the top, like, sex scene between two women, and obviously all queer people are like, no one shags like that, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You're not showing queer sex for what it is. Yeah. But it's like, oh, it was made by some dude, and, you know, he doesn't know, and it's just kind of almost gratuitous, whereas yep. Hearing Ita say that, it's like, that's how it should be. It's meant to be about, yeah, showing how the characters are changing or what they're thinking, which Normal People just smashes, doesn't it?
Yeah. And actually, that very quickly becomes clear through that process. If an image or shape is there that actually doesn't really serve as storytelling, then that very quickly gets called out. So I had a situation on a film we were working on that there was a shape proposed. And then through that conversation with the actors and the director, that shape actually, you know, the actors were talking about what this really means, what is this moment. And then through that interrogation with the director, very soon that sort of perhaps more gratuitous physical shape that was proposed fell away, and actually they were very excited about actually an alternative of what they were coming up with that really served storytelling, that the actors were comfortable with. And that's the kind of, you know, bringing in that really creative process through that interrogation, so that the actors aren't feeling compromised and the physicality is really telling the storytelling, and then everybody is really happy and can get behind, you know, then the intimate content that they have, you know, discovered together.
Do you have any favourite scenes that you've done that kind of stand out in your mind?
I'm always very excited when I feel there's something that's a really important physical storytelling to be told that hasn't perhaps been told before. So one of the ones I'm really proud of and was really excited with was the period sex scene in I May Destroy You.
Yeah. Yay. So many people messaged me being like, have you seen this scene?
Wow. Yes. Isn't that so important? Important. And again, that's, you know, the courage and the amazing writing and the amazing creativity of Michaela Cole. It's serving her vision. But you know, her writing that scene, writing the detail of that scene, writing the paraphernalia of, you know, what we use for our menstrual, you know, when we're menstruating, that was all in there, was really, really exciting. And as I was saying, sort of, if you think that half the population of the world spend roughly 40 years of their lives engaged in menstruation, 1 week of the year. So that's around about 480 weeks of half the population's lives engaged in their menstruation. And yet how often is it part of our storytelling that you see? So I was so amazed and delighted to see that scene. And then that journey through to creating the scene, choreographing it really clearly, honouring Michaela's vision, and the props department on I May Destroy You, what they created for it as well. So again, it's a whole collaboration of the whole production, really honouring this beautiful moment. And I'm so proud of that one.
Do you know what, though? I was thinking about that and also the scene. It might be the first time Marianne and Connell have sex in normal people, and there's a discussion about condom use. And I feel like it's a double-edged sword because you're watching it and you go, oh, my God, that's amazing. You never see people talking about protection on telly. And then it makes you sad because you're like, why the hell do you never see that? It's like, I'm so excited that's happened, but why is it only just happening now? Makes me kind of a bit miserable. Yes.
I know, I was thinking that when I saw your question there. I was thinking, has it not been seen that often? I was trying to think my way back. But regardless, both normal people and I May Destroy You, and also, sex education, there's been, the very, very opening scene of, sex education, isn't it? It's like having that sex and then him taking off the condom. Mm. So having those beats written and then being able to really clearly choreograph and have that paraphernalia is so important. So the scene at the top of episode 2 on Normal People, again, is such an important scene. Again, it's honouring Sally Rooney's vision, Sally Rooney's beautiful writing, and that delicate journey through each of those beats. And so important that both the request for protection is part of their beautiful journey to being intimate. It's shown that it doesn't interrupt or stop the passion, but is a really important part. And it's, in conversation with some people, I've heard them say that they're going to use that scene in sex education, for young people, so they can see that actually asking for protection, having that as part of your practice paraphernalia through to your sexual expression can be a beautiful part of just that journey through to intercourse.
Definitely, especially because so many people look to pop culture, films, TV to kind of learn how to have sex because we don't really talk about it. It's so important that it's done right.
And while we were making the scene, we were aware of what an important scene it was, but we were just honouring each and every one of those beats. And and it wasn't until then re-watching it just having impact on myself as well of what an important scene it is, and how positive it is for that to be out there.
Do you do any activities with your actors to help them build that intimacy? Because everyone was so obsessed with Connell and Marianne because they just felt so real. All I can think is, those activities where it's like, you fall and your partner catches you. I'm sure you do that. But is there anything is there homework you give them or different kind of things?
With the sex education, I was at the very top of that. I was saying to when I first met Ben Taylor and John Jennings regarding building that trust, that the best thing I can do, not just for the actors but for the whole production, to know and trust what the role of the intimacy coordination was to do the workshop. So there, it was amazing. We had a whole day's workshop where we sat around, as I do in any workshop, sharing when the intimacy work has been done well, when it's been challenging, and what they want to get out of the work, and then journeyed through to actually, creating some of the intimate scenes that we picked out from the series. And then again with Normal People, just having that initial rehearsal day. So I was in the studio with Lenny, Paul and Daisy, sharing the work, having a warm-up, working on a first scene, way before we got to filming, in that relaxed place, so that everybody understands, the process of the work, and having that chance to sort of just connect in with each other and demystify that journey through to creating. It's very often I just choose a moment of intimacy, and Lenny said, actually, no, I'd like to do this scene, which is one of the ones that was quite a full-on scene. It's like, oh, right, okay. But of course, absolutely right, because then it was like, oh, wow, this full-on scene, there was intercourse, kissing, sitting on top of, we found our way through it. And by the end, the actors go, oh, right, great, that's how it's going to be done. And then that's what gives the confidence. And I feel, knowing that there's that confidence, there's that open communication, then allows for people to be comfortable personally, so they can artistically give all of their beautiful skills, all the vulnerability that the characters bring. And I think that's what helps to build the trust. But then also I can't, you know, Paul and Daisy are both just the most beautiful people, the most beautiful, fantastic actors. And so, of course, the other side of it is this, everything that they brought themselves, you know, as the amazing practitioners that they are. And Lenny Abrahamson, the space that he holds, he's such a beautiful, beautiful, again, beautiful man as well as a beautiful director. So all of that goes to help create, you know, the content that you saw for Normal People.
Still think about it now. Do they wear like nude coloured pants and bras and stuff?
Yes. It's really,
not
really
naked,
important.
Are they, Ita?
Never, okay. never naked. Well, okay. When there's intimate sexual content, never ever do bare genitalia ever touch.
Okay.
So the least that you would have on is the lady have a genitalia patch and the gentleman a genitalia pouch, and then I've taken to have the genitalia pouch with a patch over the top that helps keep the actor really comfortable. And then we have, so that's where before the role of the intimacy coordinator, the wardrobe department have or are the experts in supporting the actor and providing all of those journeys of intimacy garments then. So we have then, as you say, flesh-coloured G-strings, flesh-coloured pants, flesh-coloured shorts, flesh-coloured camisole tops. So for a scene that you might think that they are completely naked, we'll only have them with just the least amount, the genitalia patches and pouches, when it's absolutely necessary. As soon as there's a two shot, we'll have them with their flesh coloured shorts on or their tracksuit bottoms on. So it's absolutely that journey of having the actor as covered as possible so that they are always as comfortable as possible. And that's absolutely worked with in conjunction with the wardrobe department, having all of those modesty garments ready, and of course not just in the right modesty garments, but things like I May Destroy You, really important that they're also in the right skin tone, and all of that has to be prepared in advance. That's as well a big part of just opening up that conversation right from the get-go in pre-production time, so that every actor feels really taken care of and looked after in that way.
And not to be like a 13-year-old boy, but actors ever get turned on during sex scenes? Or I don't know, because you always hear those rumours of like, oh, they were having sex for real. Or is it all just, I mean, I guess it's not awkward with you, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like if I was kissing Paul, I would be turned on. I'm not a professional actress, funnily enough.
I get, because like bodies are bodies, and you can't control whether you get a boner or get wet, can you? It just happens.
That's right, absolutely. And I have my little statement. that it's absolutely natural and normal when two bodies are moving together to become aroused. However, it's not suitable to have an erection in the workplace. So that's where you'd call a timeout. Absolutely. And I always say, you know, as you say, for a lady, it's not so obvious if she becomes aroused. For a man, becoming a man can be very obvious. And I always say, don't wait until it becomes obvious. You can feel if you're becoming aroused. Just call that time out. Nobody needs to know why. Take a break, 5 minutes, go outside, get some fresh air, whatever. So yes, it's a natural and normal part of what we talk about. It is normal. And of course, particularly the male actors, there's that worry and concern. But it's once you just normalise it, go, look, it's natural and normal. And this is a professional way in which we deal with that. And for example, the other thing that I bring in to a production is also for the ladies of people who are menstruating to ask when their menstrual cycle is, so that a production can try and schedule the intimate content when that person isn't menstruating. And just bringing that awareness in. And of course, sometimes, you know, as much as you try and do that, sometimes it can work, sometimes it just doesn't work, so you're still ending up doing those scenes when your actor is menstruating. But what's great is that once it's out in the open, once you have that open conversation about it, it's natural, it's normal, then if the actor is menstruating, then we can go, okay, so we won't go to genitalia patched on this day. We'll stick with at least flesh coloured G-strings or flesh coloured shorts, and we'll just look at different camera angles so that the actor can be taken care of and the production is still getting the shots that they need.
Oh, that's so, I never thought about periods while filming that stuff. Of course.
And it makes it so, can you imagine, it makes it so much more, you know, vulnerable making for the actor if they are menstruating. But again, you know, just talking about it and then making sure they're going, right, this is the least I'm going to go down to.
We never really see like, as much, we kind of tend to see like penetrative sex, but not much oral sex. Is it like harder to film someone going down on someone than it is like intercourse?
Yes. I've had my fair few, but
I'm sure you have with your progressive lovely shows you work on.
Again, it's just that clear choreography. Again, you don't want, you know, just as we have no bare genitalia touch, so I tend to work with genitalia cushions, so you're putting cushions in place, so of course you don't want to mouth, you know, so there's an extra barrier between someone's mouth and the genital area, and then we're looking at where thighs go, where hands go, what the camera angle is, so that the oral sex you're still telling that physical storytelling while having, you know, the actor's completely comfortable with the physical journey that they're actually performing. For example, there's a lovely moment in Gentleman Jack where Anne Lister has a flashback to a memory of a relationship in Paris that's a full-on beautiful moment of oral sex coming through to orgasm.
That's making me want to watch it because everyone was like, you're queer, you should watch Gentleman Jack. And I was like, piss off, I'm sick of period dramas. Lesbians are always in high necks. I can't be arsed. But that's making me want to watch it.
Have you not seen Gentleman Jack?
No.
Oh, yes, go and watch it.
Did you work on that, did you say?
Yes.
That was your scene. Oh, I'm in.
And
in as well.
and also that's absolutely the conversation that we had, you know. So again, on our rehearsal day, we had all the actors who are going to be performing those intimate scenes, as Saran Jones, Sophie Rundle with Sally, you know, and the three other actresses with Sally Wainwright and Anne Chomer, the expert historian and the director of the second block. And again, we sat round and that was a conversation. You know, this amazing woman, Anne Lister, from, you know, born in 1780, you know, writing these incredible diaries that encode that were then gradually being uncovered, you know, really honouring how she spoke about her sexual encounters, the loving of her different relationships, and making sure that we absolutely honoured the queer community. You know, so I did a lot of research, you know, I had the lesbian handbook, Lesbian Karma Sutra, again, making sure that the physicality and the quality of the relationship into that intimate content, you know, absolutely told the right storytelling. And that's one of the things I have been really proud of, is the queer community gone, yes, thank you. other than the fact Saran Jones's nails were too long.
do you know what? Someone's always bitching about lesbians' nails.
So please, yeah. So again, that was our intention. And I was really, really proud that that it was felt that we got it right.
Oh, that's great.
And Ita, just to finish, what are you working on next?
Oh, goodness. I have some really, really exciting projects coming up, but unfortunately I have signed NDAs for all of them. So I can't tell you what they are that I'm working on now, but I'm so honoured and blessed with the amazing productions that I've been invited in on. But Brave New World was going to be coming out very shortly.
Actually, you can watch the first episode on Now TV now, and it's on Sky One from the 2nd of October. I did my homework either.
That's got some really quite, again, groundbreaking, amazing orgy scenes. Some other... first one was choreographed by this... so we had the most beautiful, beautiful dancers that Maxine Doyle choreographed, and then into, you know, from this stunning dancing, descending into this beautiful group orgasm that has... You know, because it's Aldous Huxley's Isaac Asimov's world, and that journey through to, you know, where sex is just natural, open. In fact, it's your duty to share yourself with the community. It's actually against the rules of that community to be monogamous. And so really bringing that openness and that beauty and that freedom to a social orgasm. So look out for that one. That's coming up.
So as an intimacy coordinator, an orgy scene must be like the hardest work, surely. It's so many people.
That's right. It takes a lot of preparation. Again, really is sort of how we journey through that agreement and consent so that nobody, so that everybody's comfortable with all the physicality that's been asked of them. So yes, it's, you know, and working with Maxine Doyle on that, we sort of journeyed our way through with really good rehearsals so that we ended up, you know, creating scenes that I'm really proud of.
Can't wait for that.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for your time, Ita.
Thank
and Brave New World is on Now TV, I think, isn't it? Now TV and Sky One. I'm pretty sure that's what Rebecca told us at the beginning.
Yes. And then of course there's I Hate Susie that's out at the moment, that also myself and my whole team of intimacy coordinators from Intimacy On Set worked on. So that's another quite incredible production.
I've just started watching that, so I'm going to keep my peepers out.
Yes. Great.
Thank you, Ita.
Thank you.
Bye.
It's a joy to talk to you. God bless.
You
bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Ita. Bye. That was...
I'm speechless. I love her.
How interesting was that? That all the things you don't think of when you watch a sex scene, all the things that have... all the modesty patches that have gone into that.
No, flesh-coloured G-string, hubba.
And also it makes me feel a bit sorry for actors. Obviously not the actors that work with Ita, but the amount of pressure on them as well, knowing that everyone's going to see it. Like, if you think of a film like 50 Shades of Grey, where everyone, like, critiques Dakota's body as well as everything.
Yeah.
Like,
And also you're going into that, filming something really intimate with a bunch of people you don't know, loads of people like staring, looking at you. I mean, we didn't speak to Ita about this, but I've read that in shows like Sex Education, they tend to just have like the intimacy coordinator and one person filming instead of a whole crew, because it's like everyone's staring at you.
Yeah. God.
It would be horrible, wouldn't it?
But I'm so glad that she obviously is being recognised for her work, and therefore it definitely more productions will have intimacy coaches in terms of like a safety aspect, but also from like, it's just makes it so much better.
Yeah. And from a viewer's point of view, it's going to educate people on sex and like sexual experiences in a much healthier, progressive way as well. Oh, it's just brilliant.
It is. Although I was just, you know, you still were saying about the timeouts. God, if I was with Paul, I'd be like, how many timeouts do you need?
Also, it'd be like, why, have you got a boner else soon? You'd be like, no, I'm just a bit flustered. I need a timeout.
I'm just gently sweating. I think I'll end it now.
Yeah, let's.
This brings us to the end of this episode of Cosmopolitan's All The Way With. Thanks to Ita for joining us and to you for listening. If you have any sex questions or dating dilemmas, message us on Twitter or Instagram at CosmopolitanUK.
Cosmopolitan's All The Way With was recorded by Number 8 Studios and is available to download on Acast, iTunes and all the usual podcast apps.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.